Current time is now 7:27 p.m. here in Seoul, South Korea. It's time for our one last segment of Thursday's program. It's Made in Korea with Professor John DeMoya from Seoul National University, who joins us this evening. Professor DeMoya, good to see you again.
Thanks very much.
I love our sports talks, but you went to Princeton.
Yes, I'm not sure where this is leading, but go ahead.
I would say that you guys are a sports powerhouse when it comes to lacrosse.
Lacrosse
and basketball in the Ivy League.
I was going to say League. At one point in the mid 1960s when Bill Bradley was there. Yes.
I was going to say that
quite some time ago.
Bill Bradley came out of Princeton and he's a big name there. But
still is, yeah.
And, yeah, exactly. And so we're just gonna. We're talking about accents and things like that. We have one of our listeners, Lorelai, who's from Alabama. She's got this Southern accent. I love Southern accents. Do I have a New York accent? You hear a New York accent from me?
I don't hear it conspicuously, but I would say, for better or worse, you definitely have an American accent, and yes. I'm not sure what that means. And I definitely, if anyone's, I don't think about it, but I have a Philly accent.
Philly accent? I can't hear
people, it. People, well, I try to avoid certain pronunciations that make it more prominent, but yes, I have it.
Yeah, I can't. I tried. I'm interested.
Get me to talk about water or and then things like that. Yeah, exactly. Things that I try to avoid saying. Or my favorite, coffee.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Coffee.
That's the Philly in me.
But the Boston accent is the worst. Anyway, yes. let's move on here. Park Jung-hee, probably the most famous, or some way say most infamous, depending on who you ask.
Sure.
South Korean president in history. But still, if you look at a lot of the surveys done, like, he emerges as probably like the most popular or like the most well-known president.
And even when I throw it out informally to students, I'm amazed at how many young people might have objections to some of the political legacy, but they still have, and they've learned it probably in textbooks, very great fondness for the economic legacy.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what makes him such a popular guy.
And so that's the thing, right? We had a multi-part special on President Park Jung-hee, where we talked about the economic accomplishments, but we also talked about some controversies surrounding the former president. But we're going to be talking about how he came to power in 1961 and under what circumstances, and why the 1961 coup is such an important part of Korean history. Let's first talk about Park Jung-hee before he became president. All right. He has an interesting background.
Yeah, he comes from a family that is generally described as relatively, I don't know if I would use the word poor, but certainly not well off economically.
No.
It's where he's really interesting is that, for better or worse, both in the military and then what we'll talk about in just a moment, he always succeeded in being a striver. So he, at a time in the colonial period when very few Koreans get beyond elementary school, wins some sort of funding or scholarship to the Daegu Normal School, which lets him go through the equivalent of high school. And more importantly, if this is where you're leading, and I actually have to admit, I don't think of this image, but it's interesting. Before he gets into the military in the 30s, he is a teacher.
Yeah.
And this in Korea is a very interesting position, both in terms of not seeing Park necessarily as a pedagogue, but more importantly, in the colonial period, this is actually a pretty good level for someone from his background to have achieved. So he was successful later in the military, successful later politically, successful early on in getting himself to this stage.
So the big thing is kind of his military background.
Yes, okay? and that's the next stage.
Yeah, and I think that's the one that really kicks things off here, because even that, right, kind of going from a family that's not well off to being a teacher, and something that I mentioned yesterday, because being that yesterday was Teacher's Day, teachers, Korea in part, in its long, long history, scholars and teachers were well-respected occupations. Unfortunately, not so much. Well, unless you're a professor. Professors are well-respected.
But even we sometimes joke about it. You forget how much you are correct. It's the legacy still exists. You will still get students giving you things to show the respect. And it's a little bit unusual for someone born and raised in another country where you're kind of like, you're just happy if the students, like, you know, don't cause you any trouble. And then here they like bring you stuff. You're like, wow, this is unusual.
Yeah. And then now I've heard that in the U.S. there's the Teachers Appreciation Week. You have an entire week, which, you know,
I did not
you
know that.
You missed out on completely. But
yeah.
let's talk about the role he played in the Korean military prior to 1961, because this is the driving factor in what's going to happen now.
Yeah, and if I can link that to where we're going, which is obviously the coup, not that he could have been thinking about it this early, he's one of the unusual people who, because it's the colonial period, manages to straddle the different levels of the Korean military, which is to say he trains in the Manchuria offers military school, he later trains in the Japanese military academy, and then in an independent, almost, well, actually, it's still during the American military government, but he's in one, I think it's the second class in 46 or 47 in the Korean military academy, which means later, when it gets to mobilizing support, he actually knows the different officer factions and he knows people across those ranks. For the period we're talking about, of course, again, he manages to go through all kinds of different training. Park Chung-hee is really good at rising in bureaucracies. And then, of course, since we talked about it several weeks ago, even though he is briefly punished during the American occupation for possible role in some of the demonstrations during the period, you know, accused of being a communist, mm-hmm. once he gets cleared of that and goes into the Korean War, he rises rapidly and is promoted again. So he is a striver. I mean, I don't necessarily...
That's been the story of his life, right?
And he always pulls it off, yeah.
And that's the story of his life. I mean, coming, you know, kind of starting from the bottom, right?
Put him in a bureaucracy and say, Park, here's what you have to do. He does it and he rises. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But the controversy, and I remember, you know, talking about this during our, we had a four-part series on Park Chung-hee. Him and his kind of role with the Japanese military.
Oh, sure.
Right? And so that was very, very controversial.
And if I can mention very quickly, because people in the audience are not familiar, it's definitely worth looking at. The very big, only a couple years ago, Park Chung-hee major biography published by Carter Eckert at Harvard, he deliberately chose the picture of Park in the Kwantung Army for the cover because he knew he wanted to. And so I've used it in class, and all you have to do is bring it in, and the students all kind of like, yeah, exactly. And it's the famous picture of him with the helmet, and he's sitting there. I guess it's late 30s, early 40s. But yes, it makes Koreans resonate and recognize that they have to deal with this history.
Yeah, and being that he did have ties with, again, the Japanese military and Japan as a whole, you then later on, we're not going to probably talk about this, but 1965 normalization of relations.
Precisely, which was very controversial.
Very controversial, and what South Korea received out of that agreement,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
which,
yeah.
You know, we can go on for days talking about the controversy surrounding this.
Historians have still not resolved that, so yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But we talked about the role that he played. He's moving up the rankings here. So, like, how high did he get to?
He gets to, and it's funny because I was just talking to one of your staff before this, and we were wrestling with it. He gets to be promoted to a general. I don't know my military hierarchy well enough, but she pointed out, and I should just give credit, mm-hmm. that he is a major general when the takes place in 61. He's also described as being the second highest officer in the Korean military. But what that major general category means in terms of Korean military ranks, I'm not good at describing the equivalent.
Yeah.
But he's certainly, at least, again, nominally the number two figure in the Korean military. He's well connected, he's well placed, and then, as I said earlier, to link it back, because he trained in different places, apparently he has all kinds of feelers out to the different parties of the different generations, and so he's very good at mobilizing his networks.
Now, we're going to talk about going into the coup soon, but mm-hmm. there is the government at the time must have been in certain situation for this coup to be able to be pulled off.
Sure.
I mean, there's always kind of, I don't know, there's, you know, disconnect in the government. There's some, you know, I don't, whatever happens, there's not a lot of good things happening within the government in order for this to come out. What's the government like
at
the time?
The Second Republic, so let's see here, Yoon Bo-son is president, which I often forget that he is one of the Korean presidents.
Right, right.
He's often omitted from the list.
Yeah.
And Chung Myon is prime minister. They really only are in power from following April 1960, Lee Seung-man being kicked out. So sometime in the summer of 60 to basically May of 61. So it's like less than a year. But to answer your question then, they get all of the problems that they inherit from Rhee, which is, you know, some of the economic efficiency, some of the corruption,
mm-hmm.
and they have some of the motivation, but certainly not enough time to do much more than to begin thinking, so that the general perception now, and probably of these officers, why they moved, is inefficiency, not enough reform, the inability to get things done, even though they recognize that there were many problems left over from the previous administration. And I think that probably motivates these military officers who see, look, if we have power. We are the military. We know how to get things done in a much more efficient fashion.
Interesting comment coming in from our longtime listener, Museum, here in South Korea. He said at the time, realistically, a two-star major general, which...
Okay, thank you. That answers part of the question.
Park Chung-hee is, actually had more power to control the movements of the military than those higher up.
Interesting. Okay, that I would not have thought about. But
and so probably that's the reason why.
We can talk about that in just a moment. Sure.
Yeah, that's probably the reason why he was able to pull this off. But it's interesting, right? Like the controversy surrounding Lee Seung-man, right? Yeah. And then that also, if you were to put one word into it, power, okay?
Yeah, he certainly has everything concentrated in his hands.
And then, all the the chaos that comes following that, and then Park Chung-hee also eventually too much power, that becomes a problem too.
But really quickly, then that's why the Second Republic generally, the words that we associated in between is inefficiency, lack of power, perceptions of whatever they were trying to do, not strongmen exactly, in contrast to what's before and what comes later.
There must have been some sort of faction that existed within the military.
Yeah.
What kind of factions were within the military?
A couple different things, and really quickly, sure. Geographical, and is even now Korean politics is still described in terms of regionalism. Then more specifically, very big factionalism around the different generations temporarily of whether you trained with the Japanese, whether you trained in Manchuria, whether you trained in the independent Korean military. And again, this is why Park is seen as being an unusual person who spans those. And then I guess politically to the last thing, to the immediate situation, what degree of reform is necessary given the previous government, where to move, how to move. There are different factions in terms of do we seize power right away and hold it? And then, of course, as we know later, they were going to revert to civilian rule. There were some who said seize power, but then moved to civilian rule in a quicker fashion.
Mm-hmm. Let's also kind of talk about, we talked about, his experience with the Japanese military, but did he have overall international experience prior to 1961?
Not politically, but militarily, yes. And there's one other one I want to throw in here, so thank you for asking this. Yes, Koreans widely know, of course, about the Manchukuo and the Japanese experience.
Yeah.
Less, and I'll have to cite Greg Brzezinski's book here is where I think I read it, because he was a fairly high well officer in a late 50s Korean military that's tied with the U.S., he does spend a brief period of time in the U.S. as one of these, tours for officers from other countries to see the U.S. military. And I believe he is in Oklahoma for a few months in like 57 or 58. I'd have to look it up. But he does spend some time getting at least to see what the U.S. looks like. So in that sense, because of his military career, he has traveled widely. He has dealt with a wide range of individuals.
Yeah, yeah.
And that will later pay off in sort of political know-how and how to deal with people.
Yeah. Agree that although... Park Chung-hee has been mired in a lot of controversies. There was a lot of things that he did that other presidents weren't able to do, and that was diplomacy, right? And this is where his international experience kind of comes in. The reason why we're talking about this particular coup is because May 16th, 1961, is exactly when this coup led by Park Chung-hee happened. What kind of planning went into the 1961 coup? So much has to go right for this to happen.
Exactly.
Right?
This is the really interesting thing. So my answer will be brief. Apparently, meaning different factions within the military, Park being the main actor, but Chun Do-young and others, because Chun Do-young is technically officially the leader who appears in all those pictures in May 61. They're talking about this from as late 60 through the early spring, January, February 61. And so, the way I heard it described, it was like an open secret within the Korean military where Park and I guess a couple others, Kim Jong-pil and a few of the other people marked as the leaders, were trying to go around to different factions saying, will you be with us? Will you be with us? Will you be with us?
Hey, I heard there's going to be a coup. What would you do in this case?
Yeah,
I'm going to have to tell the president.
I was just going to say, to give you the interesting one, for Chun Do-young, who officially is in all the pictures where Park's wearing the sunglasses on the day, he's the other guy, who's technically the number one. Apparently they told him and he neither agreed to join them, but also did not report it to the right political authorities, and this was interpreted as, well, he's basically with us insofar he hasn't blown the whistle on us.
Yeah, because
he himself will get in trouble later, and that's why he no longer stays as number one, and we no longer talk about him much, but he does at least kind of listen to them and goes kind of a,
Why did, though, Park and others feel the coup was necessary?
Yeah, I think, again, the language of this particular government is not changing things rapidly economically. There were high inflation. Mm-hmm. And I guess also a lot of the deep entrenched corruption associated with Rhee, there were some questions of, well, wait a minute, we're the military. How much of us and our senior officers are essentially complicit with that and with what's going on now if we do not act?
Right.
And given the size of the military and its role within the Korean society, it was, and still is to a certain extent today, one of the most prominent institutions where they saw, wait a minute, we actually have an opportunity to do something here.
Do you think, and this is just, I'm tossing it out here, we talked about how Park Chung-hee, throughout his life, he's been very good with moving up the ranks. And given the fact that his background, although he does have an extensive military background, him kind of not coming from a well-off family, he also probably doesn't have a whole lot of connections in politics as well.
Right.
Maybe did he think that this is the only way that he's going to go as high as possible? You know, president is as high as you can go. In whatever social order, right?
I'll say that on this level. I mean, yes and no. In the sense of leadership, potentially, yes. But I don't think he was imagining, certainly, long-term in terms of the civilian role where he would put on the suit, which he does in a couple of years and actually have to be elected. Mm-hmm. In other words, I think he was thinking strictly in terms of the military seizure. And I don't think he was necessarily thinking, I mean, as we know now, that, yeah, 2 decades, I'll be around that long. I think he was thinking in terms of the immediate present and, wow, what can we do to actually make economic and political reforms in the short term.
You're looking at a person because he's seen things in multiple aspects and multiple countries. Like, he has plans for the country, right?
I mean, and the word is beautiful, the K-wick. If there's a man who loves the K-wick, it's Park Chung-hee.
It's the thing with him is with this, I mean, you can look at it as a person who had big plans for Korea.
Absolutely.
Okay. And he did. And he pulled those off.
For the most part,
he was able to pull it off. And, you know, Korea, we often associate, the miracle on Han River with Park Chung-hee, right? The kind of starting off.
Which I can't resist saying, you may or may not know this, is a term that actually comes from the Wirtschaftswunder, which is the
German
miracle
word,
of the Rhine.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah. You were the one who told me about
this.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, I just want to say, it's a German miracle that, yeah.
Right. And so he does have, so the initially, I guess you can say that his initial motive,
sure,
it was right. You know, he just
in the sense that the current government, right? I mean, in the sense that we don't know, but they certainly were not showing any great signs of change and transformation.
But I do wonder though, how is Park received internationally after leading the coup?
Sure,
though?
This is the interesting question. First of all, technically, as I mentioned in those pictures, he is not the number one. He is one among many, or certainly the number two. Chung Do-young is actually the one sort of up front and prominent. They do reach out to the U.S., among others, fairly quickly, and I imagine it's Chung probably doing the connections. But yeah, apparently they get not necessarily a great enthusiastic reception, but certainly an indication from the Kennedy administration that, yes, we will continue working with you. We kind of not quite sure who you are yet, but we're willing to work with you. And then here's the other thing, which I can't resist saying. Maybe this is into the transformation period of Park 62-63, they're now learning who he is, but they don't really know who he is, and they come up and dig up the old thing about Yosu and the communism. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, as I tell my students, you can find references early on, this went very quickly, to President Park or pre-President Park and General Park as Parksky, because it's 62 or 63, and I guess what happened in Cuba, they just want to be sure that this guy is not a red flag.
Right.
You will freely say, we like this guy, but is he? Do we know who he is? You know, and those disappear very quickly.
And of course, he does end up being...
But I guess I'm making the point that the U.S. is willing to go with this, but they're still learning who he is, and they don't quite know who he is.
Not to mention because he had a strike.
This is what shows up in his file from before.
Yeah. So, you know, the CIA looks it up and they go, well, he does have one strike, but, you know, how much of a threat
is
he?
What does that mean? Exactly.
Right, exactly. And especially in the 60s, right? In the 60s,
precisely.
A key era for the United States and kind of the Red Scare, that started in the 60s?
Oh, what if you're thinking McCarthy earlier?
That was a bit earlier,
yeah.
Right?
In fact, that's exactly tied to Korean War era, but yeah.
Let's talk about what critical change he made in 1963. We're moving forward 2 years.
Yeah, the biggest thing, and then the question is how much of this is made in conjunction with the U.S. is, and actually this is what gets Chang Jae-yong in trouble, so I can bring all this together.
Yeah.
How quickly do we transition to civilian rule? Chang apparently wanted it quicker. Park has him arrested in July of 61. And Chang, interestingly, will eventually be allowed to, he's pardoned, he'll be allowed to leave to the U.S. He goes and goes off and does a doctorate and becomes, for the rest of his life, a professor of political science at Western Michigan University, which is an interesting way of going on with life. But Park, with the support of the Kennedy administration, agrees to hold elections in 63 and famously takes off the hat, the sunglasses, puts on the suit. And for, I forget this too, he becomes a democratically elected in 63 and 67. And technically, once he extends the election in 71, again, he is democratically elected. But then by 71, he doesn't like elections so much. But in the 60s, he had to compete. He had to deal with constituents.
Right.
So in 63, making the move to a civilian election was a big risk. And he was willing to do it with some persuading.
Right. And then, you know, he talked about the 70s and, you know, he makes some reforms.
The 71 election was a miscalculation, and after that he said, I hate elections.
yeah, exactly. What kind of changes or plans did Park implement early in his transition period?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and again, this is much debated how much conjunction with the U.S. is, but immediately in 62, five-year economic planning, be willing to at least listen to economic plans from the U.S. and others, although as many have argued, he frequently listens and then does what he wants. But,
right.
but that's a way of emphasizing Korean agency within the constraints of the U.S. relationship. All other things too, socially, stuff that I, family planning, in other words, rapid getting Koreans on board with economic changes, with health changes, and also something small, although it doesn't take shape till much later. But 63 is the first time they announced the initiative for, at least in theory, on paper, a white-collar health insurance plan that later, much later, becomes the health insurance system we have now by the late 80s.
I mean, there's a lot of things that Park Chung-hee did that was
massive,
very positive.
Massive long-term things that he could not possibly have, well, he didn't live to see the outcome.
It's just things that he did in the second half of his many years as
Precisely.
President that really, you know, took a different, image of him for many people out there. So that's why I think there's this always going to be this very contrasting view of Park Chung-hee.
This is why I find, particularly among younger Koreans, which obviously my undergraduates, I'm always surprised at how much they know that second image, but they're still fairly positive about him.
Exactly. Professor DeMoya, as always, thank you very much for your history lessons today. Have a safe rest of your week, and we'll see you again.
Thanks very much.
You can listen to Korea Now with me, SJ Lee, by downloading the Arirang Radio application or tune in online by visiting www.arirangradio.com. So make sure you tune in Mondays through Fridays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Korea time.